Welcome to our Holden Village podcast. For over 50 years now, Holden Village has traveled a rich history of faith that has transformed a copper mining town into a vibrant place of education, programming, and worship. Holden has sought to welcome all who seek contemplation and community in the remote wilderness of the beautiful Cascade Mountains. We continue to invite people of all ages to come alongside our rhythms, which inspire and equip travelers for a sustainable life of faith outside the village. And we continue to listen and reflect on our story and history and seek to discover our place in God's creative mission in our world. Our podcasts are a way of sharing our conversations with our teaching faculty around reformation, the reforming of our relationships with the earth, with each other, and with the divine. Let's tune in and join the conversation.
I'm John Marty, a state senator from Minnesota for the last 32 years, a long time, and been to Holden a number of times. And this week I'm teaching on intersection between public policy and social justice and a number of issues. And one of the things I've been focusing on a lot is how we need to create hope for the future. One of my sessions was actually titled Creating a Martin Luther King Vision, or Fulfilling Martin Luther King's Vision in a Donald Trump World, because of the fact that I think many of the things Martin Luther King talked about love for our neighbors, about concern for each other, about betterment for society, are the antithesis, the opposite of what we're having in our society now, where there's much more fear and division, and we want this for ourselves against those people, the building walls, which are more than literal walls, they're figurative walls as well. We're trying to build walls between people. And Martin Luther King's vision was a world where we're building bridges between people, metaphorically, and perhaps real bridges instead of walls. That comes this year at a time where the last month or two has been filled in the news of U.S. immigration policy and this family separation thing where they're yanking young children away from their parents. Time magazine had an iconic cover last week of a little girl, a little immigrant girl who's crying as her mother's being searched and patted down, and the girl's crying and looking up in fear, and a picture, superimposed a picture of Donald Trump looking down at her with kind of a glare, and the head caption is simply, "Welcome to America." And it's very clearly, it's not a welcome to America. We don't want you here. And I think it's important to talk about how we are a nation that consists, at least 99% of us are immigrants or children or descendants of immigrants. And we are treating it as if, oh, those people, meaning new immigrants, are not only unwelcome, but they're bad people. They're evil, they're harmful, they're going to hurt us, everything like that. And we don't just degrade them in terms of they're lesser than us, less valued in God's eyes than we are. We call them illegal. I don't know how a person can be illegal. It's not a very Christian understanding of what a person is, but we call them illegal. And they're undocumented. Well, you know, we whose parents or grandparents or great-grandparents came over here to somebody else's land, we didn't ask for permission. We didn't have documentation. We came on our own, and because we needed to either escape some awful thing happening or hope for a better life. Both of those are reasons people come here these days. In many, many cases, it's because of fear for their lives. And we want to shut the door on them. And so I want to, as we talk, 4th of July, Independence Day, talk about our nation's values. I want us to get back to the concept that separating young children from their parents, which has been widely condemned from both political parties, from almost everybody, as being condemned, is a very inhumane and cruel way to treat people. And I want us to start talking about how we got to that situation, how we got to this thing where we as immigrants say, we don't want you immigrants here. And that's not new. I mean, it's been true. Every wave of immigrants wants to ban the next wave or wants to degrade them or treat them as lesser. But we're at a time that the hatred and the exclusion of others has grown more than it ever has been in the past. And I guess that really bothers me to see. I think that Holden Village is a community grounded in faith, people who care about others, who care about their neighbors in need. And we ought to be finding ways to welcome people into the community. Last year, I found a website, a picture on the internet that I thought was really powerful. It was in Milwaukee, Oregon. A lumber company there has interesting signs on theirs, and it was a sign that said, "Forget the wall. Build a deck. Invite everyone over." And I thought, that's a great sign for a lumber company, and instead of building fences and so on or walls, build a deck. They're going to sell lumber either way. But it was the metaphorical picture that they were trying to get across. It's saying, hey, let's not build walls between peoples. Let's be more welcoming than that. Let's put out a deck, build a deck, and invite everyone over, which I thought was a creative and beautiful statement. And I think that's what Holden is trying to reach out to people with, the understanding that we're all God's children, and why are we who are immigrants so harsh and nasty to newer immigrants? And so I really am hoping that some of the talks this week can help inspire people on how to move forward at a time when we're facing more division and incivility and hatred towards others than we've faced in, I don't want to say ever, but we've got a higher incidence of that in our society now than we've had in a long time. And our national government intentionally saying, we want to keep these people out. And these people who come to our borders, often in pain and fear, the message of the Statue of Liberty, which is a great American icon, give us your tired, your hungry, your poor people coming here in desperation, and we're welcoming you with a lantern, and we welcome you, we want to help you. And our nation's official policy has turned to the exact opposite of that. And so I'm hoping we can move forward in a positive way, and that's one of the messages I'm trying to talk about.
I mean, Martin Luther King is obviously prime example of a way to create hope and have sort of a vision of looking forward. How are you using that message? I mean, that would be that I'd have to have gone to your talk. Or other messages. Mm-hmm. Where do we find the hope?
Right, and that's key, because if you want to fulfill that vision, the first step you have to have is to restore hope. And it's understandable when people get beaten down. I'm not talking about optimism versus pessimism, because there's plenty of cause for optimism, plenty of cause for pessimism. But hope is something deeper than that. And I think the most important thing we have to do is restore that hope. And Martin Luther King was very articulate in talking about, you may not get there, you may not succeed. You do succeed, you make lots of victories, but you may not get your ultimate goals. Our lives are too short, and as he said, the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice. And his I Have a Dream speech, which is so well known, is beautiful, saying, here's what the kind of world we want, here's the kind of society we want, here's what we've got to get. And he later on, a month or two before he died, he gave a speech called Unfilled Dreams, and talking about how Mahatma Gandhi made steps forward, but he got India independent, but he also wanted a united India, and the Hindu-Muslim violence was so great, he died, was assassinated in the middle of that violence that separated into India and Pakistan and so on. And so he talks about how you keep the hope, even if you're David fighting against Goliath, even if you're not sure you're going to win, how being on the road to where you want to get to is the right step. It's very important to be on the right road. And he talked about how that's one of the ways you create hope. Others have talked about how much hope, even for people who don't have a religious belief, seems to come from outside. It seems to come from some higher power or some people of faith that comes from God. But even people without any faith seem to get their sense of hope from others somehow or another. And I think it's very important. The first step you have to do if you're going to move forward is have that hope. You can't have the defeatism. You can't have the cynicism that there's no chance. What difference does it make? Whatever I do doesn't matter. You need the hope. And so I think Martin Luther King's an illustration of that, because throughout his life he was fighting battles that weren't going to change. And he knew you weren't going to end segregation. You knew you weren't going to change voting rights. You knew you weren't going to do this. But he kept plugging away, and he didn't reach all his ultimate goals. You don't. But he still, because of that hope and because of the continuing to work that comes from that hope, you're able to have success. Yeah, the very last one, the very last day.
So I've seen the...
Yeah, the night before he died was right. Prescient about what might have happened. Yeah, I've been to the mountaintop. I've seen the promised land.
Right.
I may not get there with you, but we're going to get there. We as a people are going to get there. Very biblical imagery. He's saying, hey, I that part of my hope, I know we're going to get there. I've seen it. I can see what's ahead. I may not get there, but I mean, what a hopeful message there. I mean, he's saying, hey, don't worry. I mean, if I'm not with you anymore, it doesn't mean you're not going to get there. So it's telling them, when I'm gone, continue the hope.
Right.
Each one of us has our own type of hope, but that hope is, it's a common hope, too. I think most people, even people who are cynical and jaded and whatever else, they still have some flicker of hope inside of them. And when others appeal to that hope and remind them and stir up that hope, it rekindles it and so on. And it's not just the hope inside your heart. It's the hope of you and the community around you. And the stronger that flicker of hope in you grows, the more it spreads to others, and it's contagious. Yeah,
absolutely. Nice. But you had two other
sessions, or
I've
got three more this week. I'm doing one on
what were the titles again?
One of them is Healing Healthcare.
Okay.
And my argument that we these days we are very much trying to save what's left of our healthcare non-system, or some people want to take it apart, some people want to build it up. But in either case, we've got a dysfunctional healthcare system. Some of the best doctors and hospitals and nurses, others in the country, in the world, but the worst system for accessing it. And I've got a proposal and a way of articulating that I want people to understand that I think we have to stop tinkering with a broken system and say, we want to set up a new system, a universal system, like police and fire, like elementary school. Everybody gets to go. You don't have to qualify to go to kindergarten. You don't have to pass a test. Your parents don't have to have the right school insurance plan. They get a go. You get a go. But with healthcare, well, you got to have the right insurance plan. You have to have the right qualification. You got to qualify either through work or through income or whatever. You can qualify to get healthcare. And so I'm talking about how we need a system where healthcare is accessible to everybody without qualification. And then I'm doing one on, it's titled Baking the Planet, talking about how we have to address climate in a way that's far more urgent than we as a society are, and how we're the only country on the planet that I'm aware of where climate change and human impact on the climate is debated. Where there's a lot of people who say, oh, it's bogus, and we don't care what the science says, we don't believe it. So we're talking about that and how we move forward in a rational way on a very topic that has the potential to destroy humanity and the planet. And, I mean, the planet will still be here, but to destroy the life as we know it on the planet. So we're talking about that. Another one I'm talking about, creating a different approach to international relationships, and that's a... Why don't we have a U.S. Department of Peace? We have what used to be called Department of War, now Department of Defense, but it has the same role. It's fighting fights. And sometimes it's a lot easier to bring people together. And a story in the 1880s or so in Argentina, between Argentina and Brazil, there were two armies, growing clashes, and it was going to be a war. And tens of thousands of soldiers marching many miles to get there, and two bishops, one from each side, went together and in front of the troops hugged each other, and they ended up getting a peace agreement signed between the two, instead of a war, they did that. And there's a big sculpture on the mountain of Christ in Rio de Janeiro of to commemorate that moment, that two bishops risked their lives going in front of the troops and hugged each other and kissed each other and said, we're going to get along. And why can't our international relations, not just our country, but certainly our country could be a leader in that, saying, you know, war is the way we've been deciding things, but there are better ways. So I'm talking about that as well.
No, that's fantastic. I had no idea that that was the story behind the statue.
Yeah, I didn't either.
It's
until
the Redeemer, Christ the Redeemer.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was, these two bishops came together in front of him.
It sounds like that would make a really good
a movie.
Yeah,
it would.
Yeah, I mean...
I'm not the media kind of person, but yeah, it would make a beautiful movie because it's a real incident, and it was life changing. I mean, that's 150 years ago, and so nobody around from it anymore. But it's a lesson we could learn from.
Yeah, no, I mean, being that close on the edge of an actual war with all the troops.
Right.
Yeah, I mean. The whole nonviolent approach takes as much energy and strategizing
as the war does too,
and that's something I've been learning more and more. You can call it militant, but it's still strategic.
It's very strategic. Pacifism.
In terms of the sit-ins.
Right.
And
a pacifist is not passive.
Right.
A pacifist can be very aggressive and so on. And sometimes people say, oh, if you go up against the guy who stood up to the tank in Tiananmen Square, you're going to get crushed. You're going to get whatever. In a nonviolent movement, in trying to build peace, there are going to be people who die.
Yeah.
And you can say, see, it fails.
Right.
But wait a minute. In a war, a successful war,
right,
people die too.
Yeah, and you're causing a confrontation in people's minds
and
perspectives that cause them to change their change their feelings about it. Really,
absolutely, you're trying to change their minds.
And you get people that act as martyrs or catalysts.
And I mean Mahatma Gandhi type. Really, he couldn't prevent the second war, but he prevented the war for independence. It was a peaceful war. It was sit downs and protests and breaking the conscience of the other side to say, why are we doing this wrong thing? And there are so many times, and it's really ironic, actually, and I'm not an expert in international relations, but the current administration has so many vicious, hateful, nasty things they're doing. But the one thing that I was going to say is when he went to met with North Korea, I mean, we got a bluster and everything else, but people condemning him, he gave up these military exercises with South Korea, what did he get from North Korea other than a meaningless promise? I thought, well, wait a minute. A couple months ago, a lot of us were worried we were going to have a nuclear war with North Korea with two interesting leaders threatening and bullying each other. And instead, they sit down and talk and shake hands, and they both say we're going to do something, and maybe they're not going to do it all. But one of Ronald Reagan's military advisors was saying, Reagan would never have done that. Reagan would never have given up these military exercises without getting anything in return. And I'm thinking, boy, you're sure condemning him. I thought, this is the first time we've had face-to-face meetings with North Korea, which we've been for multiple administrations of both parties saying, we're not going to do that. Well, I don't support anything this administration's doing, but I got to say, what he did with North Korea is a lot better than what we've been doing in the past, and that is just worrying about what all is happening. Instead, we sit down and talk with people.
Right.
So, there are better approaches than just more war.
Thanks for joining us for another Holden Village podcast. Be sure to view the links in the description for more information or visit our website to find out more about the village. We hope you will make a pilgrimage to Holden. Blessings and peace to you.